Why is it, do you think, children are always too young to hear the truth, but never too young to be lied to systematically, conscientiously, in the name of education?
This is Teachers for Class War on Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.1 FM. Listen online at freakradio.org. Yes, indeed, it's the 14th of September, 2009. As I mentioned, Informativo Pacifica has been moved, and as of tomorrow, uncertain where they will land on the KPFT schedule, but they are going to continue to broadcast or produce the show in the morning so that stations like ours can continue to pick them up, even though they do not even know where and when their program will be broadcast at their own station. Upcoming shows on Teachers for Class War, we're going to speak with some teachers from Kent, Washington, who went on strike last week, and apparently that was resolved this morning, but they're in meetings right now, so we'll get the information next week. And we're going to get an update from Oaxaca with some teachers coming up in the next couple weeks as well. Couple of events to tell you about super briefly. Jesse James will be sentenced on Thursday the 17th, this couple days from now, so stay tuned for more information about that. Check indiebay.org. And two events at Barrios Unidos that I want to mention. One is Homies Unidos' Alex Sanchez, who's been arrested on federal charges, and he's a Salvadoran gang organizer. They're going to show Hijos de la Guerra about the MS-13 at Barrios Unidos as a benefit for Alex's defense and to get more information about Homies Unidos out there. Also, M1 from Dead Prez will be at Barrios Unidos on the 28th, so stay tuned for more information about those events. As for today, we're going to hear from the president of the United Teachers of Richmond. Her name is Pixie, and we're going to talk about the East Bay teachers who voted by a margin of 93% to 7% to allow union leaders to call a strike if necessary during this school year. This was sparked by the district's unfair imposition of a labor contract. I'm reading from UnitedTeachersOfRichmond.com. The unfair imposition of a one-year contract that increases class size, ends teacher benefits for families, for their families, gut seniority rights, and other take-backs. So West Contra Costa Unified School District, earlier in the year, pink-slipped 125 teachers, made further cuts, and then dragged their feet on contract negotiations through the school year, and then in July unilaterally imposed a one-year contract that had these further cuts. In response, the teachers again voted on the day before the first day of this school year to allow a strike, to authorize preemptively a strike if necessary during the course of this school year. We'll also hear from Danny Santana, who's the media contact with South Central Farmers. He's been with the garden since late 2005, and he's going to tell us what's been going on lately at the South Central Farm, including a recent reunion at the farm, action at City Hall continuing to oppose Horowitz's development plans for the plot, and their CSA, their Bakersfield farm, all that and more. So stay tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 and www.freakradio.org. I forgot to cue up a song, so I'm not entirely certain what we're going to hear here.
The Oops. Carrion, severed limbs, litter the battlefield. We're running like rats from a burning sky, but it's nothing to warm our bodies. Lie in wait, knife in hand, for the few remaining angels. Pray or talk to yourself. Someone told me that it might help.
Yeah. The singularity.
Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 FM and www.freakradio.org. As we mentioned, welcome to Free Radio Santa Cruz, President Pixie.
Good evening, Daniel.
Thank you for taking the time to speak with us. You're the president of the United Teachers of Richmond.
I am.
Can you give us an update on this strike vote? We were just mentioning to the listeners that the margin was substantial.
It was. We had a 93% margin on our strike vote that we took the first day that the teachers were back. And the teachers here in West County, we represent the teachers in West Contra Costa County. That's in the East Bay, San Francisco Bay Area. And we have about 2,000 teachers, and we're very upset because the district has can't seem to figure out how they can balance their budget except by stripping the teachers of all of their health care for their families, their children, and increasing class sizes to the point of the ridiculous, and have taken a lot out of our contract that has nothing to do with money.
Can you talk a little bit about the timing? I'm curious about it being on the first day of school, and we understand that the one-year contract was imposed over the summer in July, but I'm wondering if this was just, you know, specifically timed for the first day of school to start the year off with such a stance.
Well, we decided that we needed to make sure that the district understood that we were serious about going back to the bargaining table. We really haven't done any bargaining since last year when the district declared impasse on us, when we felt that they really hadn't done any bargaining, and we were very clear that we wanted to go back to the table and do some bargaining, but we told the district we wouldn't come back until they actually did something that showed that they weren't just going to take everything away from us. Every time they came to the table, all they did was take something else.
I'm a teacher here. This is Jessica, and you haven't spoken to me yet, but there's just the two of us in the studio, so I just wanted to give you a heads up that you're hearing two different voices.
Thank you.
I was wondering if you would talk a little bit more about the exact circumstances. Like you said, class sizes are large, and I feel like I've been hearing since I was in elementary school that class sizes are too large, and now that I'm a teacher, I've got extraordinarily large class sizes, in my opinion. I'm wondering, like, exactly what numbers and some of the more precise factors.
Sure. The teachers in West County had specific caps on their class sizes. We had kindergarten through grade 3 that were at 20, and grades 4 through 6 that were at 33. And then we had in our middle schools and high schools our reading and English classes at 32 and other academics at 35 and PE at 40. What the district has imposed on us is taking away all caps on our classes. So they can put as many kids as they can jam into a room. And in some rooms, I got to tell you, they have jammed more kids than anybody would ever believe.
Mm-hmm.
We have PE classes at 75. Now you can't teach PE to 75 kids. You know, you're doing crowd control.
Wow.
We have kindergarten classes at 31. 32. We have third grade classes. It's similar numbers, and again, it's safety issues. And then talk about educational issues. What is it that you're teaching? How can you imagine teaching 31 kindergarten kids how to read? And that's what they're doing in kindergarten these days.
Right.
It's not just coloring and pasting.
Right. Absolutely. Well, it's not that I want to be really clear. It's not that I'm asking for justification. There's a lot of, you know, Daniel's been informing me about some of the things that have been going on with Richmond, and I'm doing a lot of compare and contrast with my union and my school district, so that's why I was asking.
Mm-hmm. What? Oh, where are you?
In PVUSD, Pajaro.
Okay. Well, are you asking me? I'm not sure that whether you asked me another question.
Well, no, but I have another one written down, so
okay.
I'll just go ahead.
Go for it.
The second one is obviously in that same vein. Do unions collaborate? Do you all sort of cross-pollinate your ideas with each other?
Well, we do talk with each other. I'm in a group of presidents that meet several times a year where we talk about what's going on. We do have groups that talk about coordinating our bargaining so that we don't have to make sure that, you know, that somebody isn't ending up with a really bad contract because they don't know. So we do spend a lot of time talking to each other and working with each other and trying out ideas. What we feel is happening right now is we're sort of on, I call it the bleeding edge, because this is a school district with a long history of not spending their money properly. You probably aren't old enough to remember, but in 1991, this is the district that was the first one that had to borrow from the state and actually was going to declare bankruptcy, except the courts ruled that you couldn't close the schools, you had to keep them open, and you couldn't declare bankruptcy. So this is the district that used to be the Richmond Unified School District, and the city of Richmond said they didn't want the school district to be known by the name. They were saying bad things about Richmond, so the district changed its name to West Contra Costa Unified School District.
So how many millions of dollars in debt does it take to reach that point where you ask the state for money?
Well, at the time, we were in 1991, what was happening was there wasn't enough money to finish the school year. They were going to close schools as of the 1st of May, and the court said, no, you can't do that. So it depends, of course, on the size of the district. It's a pretty large district, and it's not a very well-funded district. We're in an area that is has a lower socioeconomic area and not a great tax base, so we're suffering even more in this bad economy because of foreclosures. We have a huge amount of foreclosures in this area, one of the highest.
We are too, and I was going to ask if you had any particular data about how those things tie in together.
Well, certainly they have a lot of impact on us because the money that's not being collected in taxes can't be going to the state, and that's a lot of the problem that's going on in the state with the state budget, is that there just isn't enough money. But I have to tell you, the state hasn't taken care of their schools over the years. They haven't put the money that needs to go into education there.
Right.
And as a result, those of us who are right on the edge are falling in the hole, and there are going to be plenty falling after us.
Mm-hmm.
We're just like the first, yet again.
And so, like your neighbors in the Oakland Unified School District and other, I mean, they're... We gave you a call and we want to talk to you specifically because we're seeing examples of teachers getting organized in a variety of different ways around the country, where there was just a strike in the Pacific Northwest in Washington.
Right, the Kent School District.
Exactly, and we talked with someone from UTLA a couple weeks ago about the LA teachers who were arrested outside the school board meeting. And I have to say, I was impressed to see the United Teachers of Richmond take that vote and walk into the first day of school to see what their roster looked like and see what their class size was going to be, having voted that at any point, if conditions were as such that it was time to issue that call, they would be ready to go on strike.
Well, what happened was after we took that vote on the 20th of August, the district came back, faxed us a letter and said, oh, gee, maybe we're willing to sit down and talk to you again.
Hmm.
And so on the 1st of September, we did meet in a bargaining session. It was not very productive. I hadn't expected it to be. We had long and far-ranging discussions about a whole lot of subjects. It was the first time we'd sat across the table from each other in several months. So we're meeting again tomorrow, actually. We said we weren't willing to meet again until we had the paper that they have to file with the county called the unaudited actuals that says exactly what they spent and exactly what they got for money so that we can take a look at it. We believe that the cuts that they are asking the teaching force to take are way more than what they need.
Well,
we have numbers to prove it.
Okay. So it's that eternal question of how much is corruption, how much is funding, how much is, actual rising costs, how much is falling tax base or revenues. Assuming that you're able to plow ahead, do the bargaining, get a contract ratified that's not a one-year imposed contract, and organize yourselves, what can teachers do nationwide, but locally as well? What can teachers do beyond their own contract negotiations and their own time in the classroom to push for larger scale education reform?
Well, I think you've hit it right on the nose, is we have got to make people understand how badly off we are. You know, I think teachers are, I say this to a lot of groups that I speak to. It's sort of like living in an abusive family. Teachers have for years covered up the low funding that we have for our schools. It comes out of our pockets. It comes out of our any extra time, you know, teachers spend hours that they're not paid for. But the piece that I think the public, except for the parents and the people who know teachers, have no idea how much teachers take out of their meager salaries to keep the schools running. Paper and pencils. I don't know a single teacher who doesn't buy copy paper. And if the machine isn't working at school, which has happened quite often, that you go to Kinko's or to Staples or to someplace to run your homework or to run those tests that you have to do because you have no choice. Mm-hmm. Teachers have been subsidizing education forever, and we're getting to the point where we can't do it now. Teachers can make small fixes, but the problem is so large that we can't do it. We don't have enough money in our pockets to be able to fix it. Mm-hmm. So something has got to be done in this country, in this state, so that people understand that if you want quality education and you want highly qualified teachers and you don't want people who just come in and teach for a year or two, that something has got to be done in order to fund our education system. Because right now, it's not happening.
How do you deal with people answering that question with charters and private schools?
Well, charter schools are a very interesting group. They're ways that people can do something so that they can get a little bit more money in funding, because they do get a little bit more money, and that they don't have to be under some of those stifling rules that are out there. Clearly, I'm for charter schools that are organized, that have a union and a contract, so that they aren't just at will employees and can be let go at any time anybody feels like it. But
right.
Private schools, I think they meet the needs of certain students and certain families. I just feel badly when people say education is becoming such in the public schools that they can't get the kind of education they want for their students, and they have to take them somewhere else.
Right, absolutely.
As the contract negotiations press on and you know, you're looking for a longer term contract again, what would it take for you to follow through on that strike? What would happen? And, you know, I don't want to ask you to speculate too much, but what are some of the conditions that would lead teachers, given the situation that we're seeing and given that 93% authorization, what are some of the things that might lead to a strike?
Well, I think if the district doesn't figure out how to come back with some sort of a proposal that is palatable, I mean, we know that everybody's hurting and that there isn't enough money, but to have the teachers be taking the brunt of it and to be paying more than their fair share, I think, is the part that has our members pretty upset. They believe that the district could do other things. You know, when the superintendent says, well, I'll take the same cut in my health benefits as the teachers, and he makes $250,000, and most of our teachers make around $40,000 to $50,000. Parents who are teachers are going to be paying a quarter of their salary for health care for their children. Mm-hmm. And the superintendent, it's going to be, you know, he might not be able to have a latte every other day or something in order to pay for his. But
so he's taking the same dollar amount out as opposed to the same percentage
exactly,
cut.
Exactly. So those are the kinds of things that are really making the members angry. And of course, the class sizes are just insane. I mean, mm-hmm. When you get another kid in your room and you don't have a chair for them, it's difficult.
Absolutely. We're dealing with the same thing where last year I had 25 chairs in my room and 55 students walked in the door on the first day of school, and I had to figure out how to deal with that.
Okay, I guess you're sitting on the floor.
Right, right. I mean, Yeah, it definitely impacts. The other thing is that did change after somewhere between 4 and 6 weeks. We leveled out a little bit, and we still weren't 100% legal at 35. But it really, I mean, messing with the first 4 to 6 weeks of school really taints the rest of the year. And in my opinion, it really robs the students of the first 10% of their school year.
It does. It totally does. You know, one of the things, one of the articles that they removed from our contract in an imposition was we had a rule that said that, an article in our contract that said that we couldn't hold back to school nights. That's the night when parents come in and hear about the program.
Mm-hmm.
And that it said in our contract that we couldn't hold those until they balanced the classes.
Huh.
Now, they took that out, so we're holding back to school night. First one is coming up on Thursday in classes that may be reorganized or re-spread out if the superintendent keeps his promise to say that, you know, he's going to try and balance these classes. But that's ridiculous, because then you go to a class, you hear a teacher, and then your kid ends up in another class, and you have to start all over again. It's
right.
Not right.
Right.
It's too difficult for the kids.
So, speaking of too difficult for the kids, how do you all work? I mean, I haven't gone on a strike as a teacher, so I don't really know what happens with the students. Do you all hold classes in another place at another time? Do the students stay home? What exactly happens for the families when teachers go on strike?
That's a decision that each family has to make one at a time. The district is talking about hiring scab workers to come in and break the strike at over $325 a day, which is about three times as much as a regular substitute makes.
Mm-hmm.
Parents have to, you know, I mean, it's a hardship for them too, but we're hoping that they will see that if they don't rise up and defend their kids' education, that nothing's going to change. Because,
right.
You know, the teachers can scream and shout all they want, and people say, oh, it's just those teachers. But
mm-hmm.
if the parents are saying, wait a minute, my kid is in a class with 34 other kids, how are they going to learn? How are they going to be able to pass those tests? How are we going to be NCLB, not have to have all of the sanctions from NCLB because our scores are too low?
Mm-hmm.
When we've got kids in classes, that how can you be helping them?
Right. I mean, yeah, you don't have to sell the idea to me. I'm 100% behind you. I'm just really curious about, you know, what the whole procedure looks like and how long folks would stay on strike. And, you know, financially, if they're willing to pay, you know, 97% of the staff agree. I mean, I'm assuming 97% will actually follow through on the strike. Does that mean they're willing to pay the $325 for each of those people? And then what does that do to the budget? That can't make things any better for them.
Well,
so
remember,
anyways,
the teachers will lose their daily rate. And,
right.
That doesn't mean, I mean, we have a lot of teachers who don't make that as a daily rate.
Right.
And then there's all of the issues of parents who decide that they don't want their kids at school. But no, there won't be real teaching going on. What we know from other strikes, such as the Hayward strike 2 years ago, was that, you know, they put the kids into the multipurpose room and showed the movies.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand, you know, parents who need daycare and who need to have their kids someplace. But I also know that there are parents who are talking now in our communities about, you know, having a group where parents would come together and make sure that the kids were safe and taken care of at somebody's home.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hoping that this doesn't come to that. We've actually never had a strike in Richmond, but I think that this, if it's going to happen, it's going to happen this year.
Uh-huh.
Well, we'd like to stay in touch as the school year presses on here. I want to thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your having me on your show.
Absolutely. We'll keep our eye on Richmond and see as things develop what happens next.
Thanks so much, and good luck. Good luck with your class.
Thank you. Well, that was last year. This year's better.
Okay. Good. I'm glad to hear it.
All right. I'll talk to you later.
Thanks so much.
Bye.
All right, thanks, Pixie.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 and www.freakradio.org. That was President Pixie Hayward. I'm not going to venture the last name. A musical break. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz. This is Teachers for Class War. We air our show every Monday, 6 to 7 p.m. We are now talking with a caller named Danny Santana from Los Angeles, I believe. We're going to talk a little bit about the South Central Farm and get an update from him. Danny, can you hear us?
Yeah, I can hear you loud and clear.
Okay, great. So can you just start by letting us know, and we know briefly what's gone on with South Central up until the farmers getting kicked off the land and the land being bulldozed. But after that, can you give us just sort of a brief history of what's happened in the last year plus?
3 years.
3 years. Yeah, oh, God, it's been a long time.
It's been 3 years. Can you tell us what's happened since then?
Wow. So lots going on. Just first of all, you know, I can tell you that, you know, we haven't stopped, you know, doing what we're doing out here. So as far as what's happened, you know, ever after the eviction has happened, you know, we did make a movement, you know, to appeal the judge's ruling, which was, you know, was against the farmers, you know, believe that, you know, warehouse was, although this was a backroom deal that had happened, you know, the judge went ahead and believed that it was a good thing that to have that warehouse, you know, using the pretext of jobs and all this stuff. So unfortunately we did appeal, but we didn't. We just recently found out that, that the appeal was, of course rejected. So, unfortunately, that's where the legal stuff has gone. But as far as movement-wise, after being evicted from the land, just the farmers have continued continued to farm, you know, because that immediate need of needing to bring food to the community was still there. You know, they still needed to feed their families. So, some of the farmers actually went ahead and went ahead to go farm. Originally it was started out in Fresno, and now we're farming up in Bakersfield. So right now, we're still doing that. We're working on that program right now, just trying to continue to educate the community about healthy organic food. We're doing it through our community-supported agriculture program right now, and we actually still have a community center. We have a center right across the street from where the farm used to be, right across from it. We have the South Central Farm Center. It's on 41st and Long Beach. It's still in South Central. So we're utilizing it as a community space, as a community art space, encouraging community members, you know, to have, you know, to teach classes there or just simply go and check it out. It's a place for volunteers, and we've been letting a lot of community organizations come in and just utilize the space. And we've just been working on different projects since then. One of the things that I'm pretty sure you've heard about was the warehouse that they want to construct on the land, and right now nothing has been built on the land. The land is still, it's still been after they mowed it down and whatnot. It's they haven't built anything on there, but what they do want to build is a warehouse for Forever 21, which is it's a clothing company out here in LA, and they want to turn it into this huge warehouse, and it's just a big issue. We actually had a community hearing with the LA Planning Commission. Who actually wanted to go ahead and give the go ahead to the developer to build this warehouse without filing an environmental impact report, and so that was what we were fighting. We were fighting that we demanded that they filed an environmental impact report, and they did this in July of last year, and the deadline actually has been up already because it's already been a year since we've demanded that, and luckily we did win that battle. But although we did demand that impact report, and it's supposed to be expired right now, but from what we hear from our sources is that the city is considering on not letting that request be terminated. They're actually considering on leaving the file open indefinitely, meaning, you know, they can turn in this environmental impact report whenever, you know, even if it has been over a year that he hasn't turned it in. And so that's one of the issues that we're fighting right now. Is, you know, just trying to see where the environmental impact report's going. But, you know, once again, the LA City Council's using the pretext of, you know, the economic crisis, you know, saying, you know what, we need jobs. And, of course, you know, we're not here to argue, you know, we're not saying that we're not against jobs, you know, we're not definitely not against jobs or anything like that, of the needs of the community, because, you know, that's what we're fighting for is the community. But, you know, what we are saying is also, you know, there's plenty of, you know, empty warehouses along the Alameda Corridor as well, you know, why is it that, you know, they're specifically trying to get this land right here?
Well,
in
and
South Central.
From the start, it's also been about the process and following the procedures that have been laid out for a development project. And in addition to the EIR that you mentioned, in terms of kind of a blank check, you know, fast track development, there, can you talk about the allegations of donations, contributions to projects and campaigns between Forever 21 and Mayor Villaraigosa?
Right. So, what we've also, you know, been a lot of, you know, there was this whole LA Times article done as well, but there was a donation given to the mayor from Forever 21, you know, first during his campaign as mayor, and, you know, and as far as, like, you know, his what he's pushing as far as, like, the schools out here, and, you know, he had this whole plan thing. That's a whole other discussion, but, you know, this plan he had as far as, like, changing the way education runs out here and in LA County. But so they donated money to him, so from the get go and whatnot. So I don't remember the exact number. Somewhere around 1.4 million. I think it's actually. I know it's way a lot more. I just don't remember the number off the top of my head. But they did give him a contribution, and, you know, and it says a lot, because, you know, since the farmers started this struggle, we've been pressuring the mayor, you know, to reach out his hand and, you know, and to help us like he promised, you know, but he has turned his back on the farmers, you know, just not taking a stance at all. And, you know, and we believe that that the fact that, you know, Forever 21, you know, is making this critical move into the community, and that he's not saying or commenting anything about it, I think that says a lot. And we mm-hmm. feel that we demand that, you know, that he. And it's very hypocritical of him, the fact that he's campaigning for this, you know, he's been spreading a lot of talk about this Million Trees campaign that he's doing, and he has not even implemented. And you know, definitely by allowing the bulldozing of the farm to happen, you know, that was just a part of the failure of his so-called mission.
And Danny, you were right on, 1.3 million, you got it. According to the LA Times, a total in contributions of nearly 1.3 million from Forever 21 and its executives over the past 2 years.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, just as far as Forever 21 goes, what's happened is actually a coalition has been built up of just different organizations from the LA County area. You know, we have... from LA, and also other organizations like DQ, the students from you know, from DQ University out in the north. We had some students from Mecha, some people from the Green Party, and just different different community organizations that came together, and we're organizing what we call a Never Forever 21 campaign. So it's basically what we're doing is we're calling on the boycott of Forever 21 in throughout LA County, throughout, you know, all over the nation, you know, because Forever 21 is across the state. It's actually even some in Oregon, but not all of the companies are named Forever 21. They go under different names and whatnot. So what we're doing is we're calling on this boycott, you know, to put pressure, and we're also, you know, our outreaching. We want to ask the CEO of Forever 21, you know, to put the community's needs, you know, as a priority. And that's what we're launching. We're also, you know, just educating. We've been going from campus to different universities. We've been going to high schools and middle schools and doing workshops about the issue. You know, what can people do? I mean, it's not just about, you know, being angry and all this stuff, but we're just trying to educate, you know, the community that, you know, that there's an alternative option, you know, aside from all the fast food, especially, you know, us, like those of us who live out here, you know, in you know, areas like South Central, you know, we don't have a lot, you know, we don't have options like Trader Joe's, we don't have options like Whole Foods and whatnot, because, you know, it's expensive, you know, to our communities, you know, so we're our local organic farmers, and we're low cost, so that's some of the projects we're doing as well. I'm sorry, I don't know if you can hear me.
Yeah.
Just a little traffic noise, you're in good shape.
So I had some questions about just in terms of what are your needs to, you said you have like a support center in the warehouse nearby. What are your needs down there? Where can people go for updates? Are, you know, other actions, you said a little bit about DQ University, but other actions that are in solidarity recently with the South Central farmers?
Yeah, definitely. As far as where people want to go to, if they want to get involved, you know, there's our community center. If you want more information, you can check us out on www.southcentralfarmers.com. That's where you could get a lot of information. you can check us out on Twitter as well. And I guess some of the things we need as far as the community center, we just need volunteers for the different components that we have. You know, we have different committees. You know, we have a group that works a lot on the community stuff. We have an action committee, which is of course the Forever 21 action committee, and that's what I'm a part of actually. And we have the cooperative, which is the group that goes out to farm and brings up, looks for volunteers who want to go learn and farm as well, because we do have a lot of people that come to us asking us for support, and helping them to start their community gardens. And and we've offered that help, whether it be giving them seeds, whether it be encouraging them to come up with us to learn how to farm, and take that knowledge and take it back to the community garden. And so that's kind of some of the things we've been doing, the things we can do to help out other people if they want to come to us and ask for that information.
Mm-hmm.
Just definitely, we also need volunteers to help us out, out there in the farm, because it is a lot of work. And, we do it all the stuff we're doing, all the funds we raise, we use it to keep our community center open. And we do want to start new projects and, that do benefit the community. We just, of course, it comes back to, us trying to, to fund these projects. And one of the things we have coming up is, we do need volunteers is on November 21st, which is a Saturday from 11 to 3, we're doing a community town hall. Where we're going to be talking about, the effects of this warehouse, because there's a lot is said about the warehouse, but, we're just trying to educate people, more clearly on what does this mean, right? Because there's a high amount of asthma, with people with asthma in the area, and it's just, what does all that traffic mean? And so that's what we're doing. And what we need, as far as volunteers, we need people, interested in translating. Just people who want to, volunteer to help pass out food or just to be of service. We need runners and just the general stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And once again, if you want more information, just check out the website and we have our number out there where you can contact us if you want to help. And also, those who are listening, who are part of, any student organizations, we can, if you want to host a film screening, you can contact us and we'll connect you with the people who can be out there. If you want us to do some kind of a panel, talking more about what is it that can be done, we could talk more about the boycott and what does it mean more for Forever 21.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just different things like that. And, just basically, we're there as a network, we're there to help anyone who's, is willing to start, because part of our mission statement is just definitely, we want to educate the community on the importance of healthy organic eating. Because that stuff is usually not accessible to us.
Absolutely. So it's not totally clear to me, and I haven't driven by. I have family in San Diego and friends in Los Angeles, and I usually drive by, but I haven't gone by for a while. So it's not clear to me. Right now, is the land completely barren, or did they get the warehouse up, or what does it look like out there at what used to be the farm?
Yeah, there's no warehouse there. It's there's just a lot of it's been flattened. It's they cut there's just dirt, but it's not a depressing sight, actually, when you pass by. I go by there, every week.
Uh-huh.
When I go volunteering and whatnot. Even though it's been mowed down, you could see a lot of the herbs that were there.
Uh-huh.
They're still growing, that they're growing on their own. And, there's animals in there, it's,
uh-huh.
it's pretty alive. It's still alive, although the farms are mowed down, it's still alive, and it's kind of uplifting to see that. And, a lot of the seeds that used to grow in there, they're still growing, especially there's a lot of alfalfa.
Hmm.
And there were some university students actually went inside and, they made this big corn monument.
Mm-hmm.
In the middle of the farm. And it was actually uplifting because, we don't know who did it, but it was there.
That's great.
And, some people actually, people who, don't have a home, we've noticed, some people stop by and live there, for a while.
Mm-hmm.
But then until, the police come in and all that stuff. To ask people to leave.
But for a garden and a farm of that scale, I mean, it takes work to really kill it.
Well, yeah, and I mean, they were killing like 14-year-old avocado trees and loquat trees. I mean, it was pretty substantial.
Yeah, there was so many trees in there. I mean, I personally, you know, I wasn't one of the farmers, you know, when I was in there. I was, you know, I came in as a volunteer, as a high school student back in 2005, late 2005. And, you know, they just took me in as a volunteer. And it was just, you know, since then, you know, it's just been a whole, like, uplifting experience, you know, working with these farmers and, you know, them teaching me, you know, what they've learned. And you know, and it's crazy. I never would have known that I had this knowledge, you know, and, you know, especially growing up and, you know, and in the LA area, you know, that, the you know, we're you know, very poverty stricken and everything, you know, that's needed, you know. I mean, I didn't even know what an eggplant was, how to use it, the same with, you know, kale and all these other crops, you know, and it's just, it's a big learning experience. And, you know, and I definitely do encourage people, you know, regardless of what their background is, you know, to check it out, you know, because, I mean, not just the farm, but, I mean, just start, you know, it's important, like you said, we need to learn, you know, that it's hard work, you know, it's not, we can't just rely on, you know, corporations, you know, just giving us, you know, all these things, you know, that are not necessarily good for our health, you know, we just definitely need to learn how to farm, you know, be able to do the hard work, because, you know, it's just something we're going to need to survive, and, you know, and it's towards that movement of, you know, making our communities, you know, more sustainable, you know, and especially we're going to need it now, especially with this whole, you know, this economic meltdown, you know, no stuff going on. We're going to need this stuff to survive.
Right, definitely. Well, do you have any other questions, Daniel?
I want to thank you for your time and for your work over the course of the last few years with on behalf of the farmers and on behalf of the farm.
Yeah, definitely. And, well, you know, once again, thank you for, you know, inviting us, you know, to speak, and you know, I was gonna try to see if I could get some of the other farmers to speak as well, but you know, a lot of the people I was trying to talk to are busy and whatnot. But you know, it's understandable. You know, everyone has their families. You know, and you know, just definitely, you know, want people, you know, to come check out this our town hall November 21st. More information, you know, check us out southcentralfarmers.com. If you want to come help volunteer with us, check out the land. You know, just completely hit us up. If you want more information about our food program, our community-supported agriculture program, you know, you can buy a big box of produce for, you know, $15. You know, it's very cheap once a week. You know, just once again, hit us up. You know, or if you want to know how about starting something like community, we're always there as a resource. You know, want more information about the boycott, you want to start, you know, educating your campus community or your community in general about that, you know, our information is always out there. And so, I guess that's just pretty much what's it. And, you know, I'm just very excited, you know, that, and I'm glad that you all invited us here to speak. Well, and,
yeah, and no, I appreciate people continually being involved and trying to keep the farm or the movement or the momentum or the support that it enjoyed or that it garnered.
Absolutely.
Keep that going. I mean, there was a huge flashpoint 3 years ago. It was like the biggest thing going on.
Yeah,
and so I'm glad that volunteers like yourself and that gardeners with that urgent need to shovel the dirt and produce food are able to continue to do so one way or the other. It saddens me to hear that it's still a barren lot. But like you said, the plants are resilient. It's there's something that's going to keep growing there.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and definitely I mean, this is what we need. We just need more outlets for, you know, for the youth, and this is one of the best ways you could do, you know. I mean, I know it's been a long time since I came in as a high school volunteer, but even then, you know, just to see that more youth are coming in and getting more involved, it's, you know, it's important, you know, especially, I mean, for areas like South Central and, you know, wherever you grew up in, it's important. So, you know, just definitely, you know, just check us out. And yeah, I don't know if you have any other questions, but I guess that's pretty much it.
We do have another question. We're gonna do it offline though. If you would hold on for just a second.
Sure.
Right on. Thank you again for your time. You're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.1 www.freakradio.org. And given that Saturday was the anniversary of the Mexican Revolution, we're gonna hear Fusil de Madera for El Día de México, el aniversario.